What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Ryan, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Doing great. How are you?
Oh, we're fired up. I mean, this is what it's all about, getting the chance to talk to you, getting ready for the Bears season, and finally getting to look at your team. There's going to be a big practice tomorrow, obviously, and then Sunday night, national television, will be the unveiling of the first team offense for the first time under Ben Johnson, of the first team defense as well. Everybody's going to play. I think everyone in Chicago is fired up to see it.
Yeah, it's going to be a great, great opportunity. Like you said, that joint practice is going to be the first step and get a team in here that's been, you know, knocking on that Super Bowl door, championship caliber team that's well coached and well prepared. So I think it's going to be a really good test for our team and where we're at. And then, of course, get a look at these guys on game day. So it should be good.
Ryan, great to chat with you. Obviously, I think we have to start with Caleb Williams, and I think everyone's really excited to see him play on Sunday in particular. Where have you seen him improve the most throughout training camp, and how do you hope to see that show up on Sunday night?
Yeah, you can see, you know, for a young quarterback, you can see his progress that he's made throughout training camp and really over the last 2 years, night and day, just in terms of the operation. And there's still room to improve. But he's taking ownership of that, being open to being coached hard, and he continues to get better. You know, with young players, it's usually, you know, 2-3 steps forward, maybe a step back, 2-3 steps forward, step back, kind of that natural progression as we've gone through camp. But I love to see him and continue to improve, you know, with the operation, and he'll have the opportunity to do that here in this first preseason game that he's going to play in.
I'm curious about that, about the play of the starters. And we heard from Ben Johnson yesterday, and he said that that it will be determined how much they play. There were a lot of things involved in that. I'm just curious, you know, coming from Kansas City, where Andy Reid played his starters, they played a lot in the preseason. What is your philosophy versus Ben's philosophy? Do you guys agree on this? How much conversation did it take to help you guys decide when the starters will play? And I could be wrong, but I'm guessing that third preseason game coming on Friday after a Sunday night game seems like this may be the debut and the finale.
Dress rehearsal,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Ben and I, we had a lot of discussions about this to start. The one thing I really appreciate about Ben is he's very, very thoughtful. And it's really a part of being a head coach that no one really thinks about when you're putting together the schedule, the workloads, working with sports science, and also your installation process as well. He's been very thoughtful with that and has had a great plan that I absolutely agree with. Obviously wanted to get a high volume of reps for that group last week against Miami as well, plus the pregame, and now be able to roll out and get these guys going in a live situation in the stadium where, you know, you got to get the calls through the headsets, and it's a normal game operation. So, you know, we did have a lot of conversations, and I like the progression. I would not assume that this would be the last one either.
Okay.
I think he's going to take a look and see how practice goes, how the game goes, and kind of determine how we're going to approach the third game. But I think we're still pretty open to how we're going to approach the Kansas City operation as well, because kind of the big challenge over the last few years is when you have that empty space where it used to be a fourth preseason game, I think you have to really look at that differently, because that's a long time between games. In between live action. So
yep.
We'll continue to work through that, but I wouldn't make any assumptions on the last game either.
you brought up working with Ben, and obviously you interviewed him and had a big part in getting him here. And I'm just curious because Molly and I were just joking about it before you came on. You know, you never got to sit in a meeting room with him. You never watched him coach on the field. Like, what has surprised you the most about Ben Johnson, the head coach?
Yeah, I knew the intelligence was very high. I knew from, you know, obviously playing them when he was calling it, that from a scheme situation, like a scheme standpoint, he was very good. Gave me vibes of what we had in Kansas City and how he was able to get players in positions to be successful, but also to attack pressure points on the opposing defense. So I knew that part was there. Had very little questions about that. I think anytime you're hiring someone, it's like, how are they in front of the room? How are they in stressful situations? What's the overall day-to-day operation look like in terms of motivating the guys and then staff? And he's knocked all of those out of the park in front of the room. He's incredible, very thoughtful on how he approaches the team, and the guys respond to it. The intensity has been high. I knew he was an intense guy, but it's sky high, and it's because he cares. The passion level is off the charts. And the guys respond to that really well, which has been really cool to see. And they trust them. We had that padded practice. Everyone was talking about how physical it was. And I told them out there, I said, you know what? This tells me that this team trusts you because not a lot of teams are doing that anymore. Practices aren't that physical. But they believe in you when you said, hey, we need to do this in order to take the next step to be a physical football team that's going to allow us to win and also be resilient when we get into the season. And they didn't think twice about it. They did it. And that was a huge sign for me.
Ryan, I'm sure you're familiar with this Seth Wickersham book that's coming out, American Kings, about quarterbacks. And Caleb has already addressed some of the stuff with his father and the pre-draft process and whether they were ready to come to Chicago or worried about coming to Chicago, etc. I'm sure you're well familiar with it. There was an element of it that I didn't hear about until recently, which is apparently there's a chapter where Sean Payton talks about the way that he evaluates quarterbacks, and he's looking specifically at Caleb, and he talked about the number of I think he calls them too many completions left on the field. The idea that sometimes with college guys you got to look at the negative plays versus the positive plays. But he said at the time that he was a little bit concerned, a little worried about Caleb's processing speed. Is that a legitimate concern? And just generally speaking, when it comes to processing speed, I mean, for years, I was always taught by people in the NFL that accuracy with quarterbacks is something you really can't learn. You're either accurate or you're not. You can either throw the ball. You can't really get better at it, even if you can improve slightly. But processing speed seems to be something that you can improve on, that you can work at. Is that something you're counting on with the relationship between Ben and Caleb?
Yeah, and that's the time that you put into it as well. I mean, you got to get to the point. And I had all my scouts, and we actually spent time on, not so much processing speed, but instincts, read and react. And we really focused on that for every single position. And we feel like the more reps that you get at it and the more big picture understanding of what you're trying to accomplish within the scheme allows you then to start speeding that up. And the more reps that you get, the more opportunities that you get, you should see that improve. Obviously, you got to put the time in and have that relationship to get the clear understanding. So, yeah, we believe that that's definitely part of the evaluation, something that can continue to improve over time. So that'll be interesting. And then I tell you what, like, you look across the league, and I know there's historically, you're probably right, but you know, when you see a guy like Josh Allen and his completion percentage and accuracy improve like it did, you know, it gives you hope in development of really everyone on your roster. I mean, I'm looking at Nashawn Wright. I'm looking at Theo, offensive line. We're looking at Dom and Booker. Like, it's been really cool to see this staff lean into these guys and see this growth in a very short period of time. So as long as the work ethic's there, the dedication is there, the passion for the game, and then there's a relationship with the coach where they trust them, I think you can grow in all these different areas.
I'm glad you brought up Theo Benedict because we got to see him get some reps with the ones yesterday at left tackle. Is he really in the mix in that competition, or was it just sort of an opportunity to, you know, get Ozzie on the right side? How do you view that left tackle competition at this moment?
Yeah, it's still ongoing. And as a staff, I think, you know, Dan Rochard spoke recently, but, you know, we're looking for someone to take that position and go out there and play free and get after it. And Theo's earned that. He has excelled since this year. It's just seen the growth physically and performance wise. So he's earned really the right to get into that competition. So we're excited to see him get more and more reps at the left spot. And he's shown that he can play a little bit of right, and he's shown he can play guard, which is, brings tremendous value. And then Ozzie, we got to also look forward to, you know, the season two. So, you know, wherever this lands, you know, you got to show some versatility to be active on game day and to help us. And I haven't done the study. I'm sure not historically, but over the last few years, we had to be at the very top of the league in terms of the amount of different O-line combinations. I hope that slows down, but we got that we have everyone ready to go. And they can play both sides in different positions. So really excited to see that play out here. You would hope that it starts to clear itself up here, I would say, over the next week or two.
I'm curious, Ryan, do you feel when you're evaluating offensive linemen that you have an advantage as a former offensive lineman, or does it become more difficult because you know more about that position than anyone, than any other? I mean, is that a burden for you? Is that a plus for you?
No, I would say there's a couple things there. I do think when you play the position, you understand the little details. You can probably pick up on certain things. That's why I love talking to different scouts that play different positions, because they can just pick up on the small things. If it's just the stripe of the helmet, where eyes are going through, you know, a twist, or even a linebacker being able to read and react and trigger. So it's really cool to hear from different people in those positions. I think sometimes the hard thing is we have a super high standard, and you're always looking, you know, for the absolute best. And there's also in between where guys can come in and develop and get better as well. And that takes, you know, some tools and traits, especially coming out of college and even the smaller school. You understand that there's growth and they can get to that point. I would say it's probably more of a positive. And I got a couple guys on staff, you know, some tight end, some old linemen that I feel like we're dialed in pretty good. And it's starting to show up, and I love the way this is set up. Darnell continues to improve, working on his consistency and finish. And then the three guys inside with Jonah and Drew and Joe, it's been a pleasure to watch those three work together, start to gel and communicate. And I think we're going to see that early in our run game. That should get established pretty good this year.
Speaking of the run game, I know everyone, including DeAndre Swift himself, is looking for a better year this year. I wanted to ask you specifically, though, about Kyle Manungai and how fun it's been for you to sort of watch him develop over the course of training camp. A seventh-round draft pick who Ben Johnson said after Family Fest, he's someone that we're going to be able to trust. It's high praise for a seventh-round guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you pair those guys up with Eric Bieniemy, usually good things happen.
Yeah.
Kyle's been doing a really good job. You know, when you watch the tape, you really appreciate the vision, the feel at that position, and then the contact balance and the strength. A lot of times you've seen guys excel and reach their ceiling because of those traits, and that's what he has. Sometimes I think at that position you can over-evaluate, you know, the 40 time. Kyle's a guy that is going to find the right crease. He's going to fall forward. We saw that in that first preseason game. So I'm really excited about him. He surprised me. Even his hands are a lot better than I thought they were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Also going to help us in certain situations and checkdowns. And he's a pain. He's a guy that, you know, wear on you throughout the course of the game. And with that rotation, with him and Swift, and we'll see with, you know, Roche and Homer, how they you know, how that pans out. But should be a pretty cool combination.
Ryan, we really appreciate time. We'll let you go just on the way out. I'm very curious. In previous seasons, we saw you guys, you know, maybe making an extra cut and picking someone up, maybe trying to improve your team through other teams letting guys go at the end of camp. Is that still the case? Do you think that you'll be shopping around and looking? It's always important to improve your team whenever you can. Is that an opportunity that could happen before the start of the season, or do you feel pretty set with this roster?
Yeah. One, I've learned fast. I never feel set with the roster. Things change so fast, injuries or whatever. So we attack it like we did the first year. Our pro staff, including myself, will make calls across the league and just kind of see what's out there, what's available, what the chatter is, and see if that's something that can improve our football team. In terms of the claim process, once you start moving out of the first three slots there in the claim order, it becomes a little bit more difficult, got to be a little bit more selective. Thankfully, the roster's in a much better place than it was the first year when we made all those claims, so it's harder to make this football team.
Right.
We're going to be in a situation now where I think there's probably 57, 58 guys that I really would like, which makes it really hard in terms of making decisions down the stretch. But it's also a positive in terms of how far we've come. So it'll be a little bit harder. The number goes down, you know, as you get your roster set, but we'll always take swings at players that we think can improve our roster. I think you always got to stay aggressive and keep that mindset regardless of where your football team is. So we'll continue to do that.
Great stuff, Ryan. Thank you a ton. Really
appreciate you, Ryan.
To talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That is the general manager of the Chicago Bears. That's Ryan Poles. Interesting stuff from him.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Danny Parkins.
QB1 party! All are invited! Pop your champagne, smoke them if you got them.
Fight Club. R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
Jersey number one is going to the Raptors.
I would think long and hard about firing Matt Eberflus to retain Luke Getsy.
It's a Caleb Williams custom, baby!
I could do Stephen A's job, guys. It's not that hard.
Somehow when I hear past predictions from Danny Parkins, the former Score host, former host of the afternoon show here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, suddenly I don't feel so bad about my rancid prediction about the Chicago Cubs and winning the division in April or whenever I decided the Cubs had won the division. So
they're only going to remember what you did lately, Mark. It's recency bias. It's killing you right now.
Serious. I could use like 5 or 6 wins based on that. But the reason you just heard that familiar voice of Danny Parkins, who was just on the radio for 24 straight hours, and now the man wants back on again. He is a TV star, of course, from FS1, the expanded version of First Things First, which you could watch right here in Chicago on the daily from 4 o'clock until 5 o'clock. Without further ado, now joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline is Danny Parkins. Download the Circa app today. Parko, what brings you to us today, sir?
I got a lot of thoughts. I got a lot more bad predictions.
Oh, no.
Not predictions. Here we
well,
go.
Well, listen. Hey, honestly, not even really predictions. Marshall, hello. Grody, hello. Nice
what
to
up?
Talk to you guys again.
Parko.
Thank you for making time. But, you know, I've I've watched a few Cubs games of late, and you know the Blue Jays and the Cardinals, and I've seen some sputtering offense, and then I've been more engaged with the online discourse, which has made me kind of tune in to the radio station discourse. And I got a bone to pick with fans and media, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
May I pick your bone?
The floor is yours.
Okay. Does Jed Hoyer hit right-handed or left-handed? Like, have I missed Jed Hoyer not hitting the ball in a big spot? Because when I'm watching and when I see the numbers, it's Kyle Tucker. It's Pete Crow Armstrong. It's the offense. They were slumping in July. They're slumping in August. They're slumping. Like, they're sixth in baseball in home runs. Kyle Tucker has one home run in the last 33 games. Was Bryce Harper traded at the deadline and I missed it? Like, it was universally regarded as a dud of a deadline because sellers were being delusional and holding on to pieces and asking a king's ransom for the good players. So very few good players were traded. And I heard a lot of, get me Mackenzie Gore, get me Alcantara, get me Justin Verlander, none of whom were traded and none of whom hit. The Cubs need to hit. Period. It's very frustrating what the Brewers are doing, and they're making this worse. But the Cubs were 14-10 in July. They're 4-6 since the deadline. That means they're 18-16 since July 1st. Like, it's not, they're not the worst team in baseball. They're not getting any wins. They are slumping. Their best players are not hitting. That is not on the manager or the general manager. But to fans like to go at the GM or the manager because they don't buy their jersey.
You can't take responsibility away from those guys, though, Parkins.
What was Jed Hoyer supposed to do for this offense?
Hold on, because you mentioned Craig, too. And this is something that irritates me all the time. When the take comes out, like you're giving, when it comes to Craig Counsell, like he can't be the one that goes out there and hits. He can't be the one that goes out there and helps Dansby Swanson on a pivot from second base on a double play. Then what does the manager do? What are we giving the manager credit for when he does
hey,
well?
Danny.
The manager is supposed to do things to change the lineup, sit guys out. He does bear responsibility, and so does Jed Hoyer bear responsibility because he put the team together.
Wait, Danny.
Why couldn't the Cubs
Danny.
Be the creative? Team.
Listen.
Why couldn't they have been the team that got Mackenzie
Gore? I understand what you're saying about, especially about the pitching, but I always said because they didn't get the guy who was the top of the rotation ace and they didn't get better relief pitching, because there was better relief pitching to be had, by the way, that put more pressure on the hitters who were already, as you just mentioned, slumping. My issue is this. This team was built with the belief that, hey, we're going to do it around the margins because we're a small market team and this is how we're going to operate, except we're going to make Kyle Tucker for 1 year and now we're not going to take advantage of the 1 year we have Kyle Tucker. That's how I see this, is they're not taking advantage of the fact that they have
Kyle Tucker. If you could fire Jed Hoyer and hire a general manager who would get Tom Ricketts to spend like Steve Cohen, I would pack Jed's bags and put the for sale sign in the lawn in Winnetka. But that's not how it works.
No, I get like, that.
So, like, if you want to say they should spend more money and just throw more money at the problem, I'm never going to say no to that. Of course, I'm a fan. I want them to spend all of the billions of dollars on Wrigley's Pact and all of that. Obviously, I'm with you on all of that. And what Carter said about the 2032 team being as important as the 2025 team, that quote to Jesse Rogers, yeah. Obviously that's dumb. Like, and obviously he would want that one back. Like, that's obviously a dumb thing to say. Even if there's a modicum of truth into it for how a GM is supposed to look at a team, you shouldn't say it publicly. It's just bad PR. It's bad business, especially in the midst of a scuffling team. But is Kyle Tucker not supposed to play?
So I think Kyle Tucker, if he's hurt, he needs to sit down and they need to get him right. Here's why. Because
is he hurt?
There's reports out there that he's had a finger injury since he jammed his finger in the base. And there may be something else wrong with him that we don't know.
And real quick, when he was asked about it, he was as ambiguous as one could possibly be about it.
No doubt.
And so coming off the Dansby Swanson situation, I don't know if you remember this, but Dansby Swanson basically was like, I was hurt all of the year and decided not to do anything about it, but now I'm going to have surgery in the offseason. It's like, bro, if you had told us that last season, maybe we could have, you know, helped you before wasting a whole season of less than t- top tier Dansby Swanson.
You don't think the Cubs knew that Dansby Swanson was hurt, or the fans?
No. I think both. I think the Cubs didn't know to the degree which Dansby Swanson, who wants to play 162 every year, even though now he's on the other side of 30. That's the problem there. Is there's got to be a real talk between front office and player and making sure that everybody's on the same page. I don't think they were on the same page.
If players are withholding medical data and medical information from teams and disguising it in that way, then that's obviously a huge story. I do not know that to be the case. Guys are going to want to play, and if the belief is that Kyle Tucker is too hurt to play and they're just playing him because why? Like Council pinch hit PCA the other night and people went insane.
I did not go insane. I said that makes sense.
But now the belief is that they won't sit Kyle Tucker if he's hurt. Like, they've proven that they'll sit a star player, they'll pinch hit a star player, or they'll take a guy out of the end. Like, my point, Grody, is when is it on the player?
I mean, I think the majority, and maybe you're not seeing it this way, I do feel like the majority of...
You think the majority of the ire is at Kyle Tucker and Pete Crow Armstrong?
Well, I
and
think
not
Ned
Hoyer?
I think, like, when you're watching these games and you have the third inning and the seventh inning last night where the Cubs had two on and nobody out and didn't strike, well, they got one run from the Michael Busch single, but that was it. That's what Cubs are angry about. That's what the pain is on the moment. Now, I get what you're coming from since the trade deadline. People have been mad that Jed Hoyer didn't strike, that in this sacred season he didn't go after it. But I think, unfortunately, Danny, Cubs fans are used to feeling the pain of an offense not working, especially in high leverage, like 2023.
But
in September, when they had a 94% chance of going to the playoffs, and they weren't hitting, and that ended up being the problem.
Danny, it's this.
Wait a minute, no doubt. No doubt. Sorry, Marshall. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's this simple to me. Jed Hoyer told you how he was operating in terms of needing people to outperform, right? Even after they went and got Kyle Tucker, they depended on guys like Carson Kelly to outperform. Who was in the cleanup spot last night? Carson Kelly. He's not good enough to be a cleanup hitter on a playoff team, but that's where they have him because they want people to outperform. Everyone that is outperformed, and that includes PCA, by the way, who has taken a jump but has come back to earth. They expect him to just maintain the outperformance to get him into the playoffs, and we'll see what happens. My thing is, build a team where you're not expecting everyone to outperform. And that includes third base, by the way, as well. And because you understand that's the general principle, watching it play out in real time is like, what did you really think was going to happen without the booster at the trade deadline?
But do you think Jed Hoyer is just choosing not to spend
money?
No,
this is on the top. This comes from the top. This is ownership and how much money they're willing to spend at the end of the day. I agree with you on that.
Okay, well, so then, like, but at some point, like, the level of anger, like, if the whole point is, like, man, the Cubs should just be spending more money, even though we haven't, like, seen the books and we don't exactly know, and, right, it's all weird across baseball about money made, money saved, like, whatever. If the whole point is, like, the Cubs should just spend more money, fine. I'm with you guys. I'm completely in agreement with you. But, like, they can't right now. Like, they could have in the Bryce Harper offseason. They could have in the Manny Machado offseason. They could, like, right now, the guys that they have, that, by the way, everybody likes, right? Everybody likes Pete Crow Armstrong. Everyone agrees, right? He should play?
Yes.
Everyone likes Pete Crow Armstrong?
Yeah.
I have no problem with Pete Crow Armstrong sitting down for a couple of days. I have no problem with that.
Everyone wants Pete, but everyone wants Kyle Tucker to be signed this offseason, I assume, still?
No. Yes. There's another Kyle I'd rather see in a Cubs lineup. There's another Kyle I'd rather pay the money to.
Schwarber?
Yep.
What?
Listen. Okay. Listen.
Less Schwarber, money.
Grody maybe remember, it's the angriest I've ever been at the Cubs on air on the score was when they non-tendered Schwarber. Yeah. I lost my mind on the air, talked to people in the front office about it after the rant. Like, it was a thing. I obviously love Kyle Schwarber, but Kyle Tucker's the lefty with slug who's here now.
Yes.
Like, I assume Cubs fans do not want him to be gone after this year, despite a 35-game slump.
No, I think for me, it's just the realization that Schwarber would be cheaper, and understanding an organization has never given out a $200 million contract, let alone a $300 or $400 or $500 million contract. Now, they may get that Cody Bellinger lucky bump because this guy is not healthy or whatever's going on with him. But
okay, you want him to be good. You want him to be good and be heading into a contract year where he can get a gazillion dollars.
Yes, because that means if you give him the gazillion dollars, you're going to get the production for the rest of his career.
Right, and because that means that he would be producing in games that matter for the Cubs this year. I think that way too often, like if every conversation is a macro one, then fine, I'm with you. Just talk about the owner and spending money. But sometimes, like, the games happen and we react to the games, right? Like, that's like a huge part of what we do. And if your best players who you like, who have gotten you to at the point of the trade deadline, had the second best record in baseball and a top 10 offense in baseball, if they're not hitting, at some point it's on the players. You guys can tell me when it is.
No, I mean, like, here's
it's on the
only,
players right now.
Here's what I'll say, Danny, and then I got a couple things here for you here in a second. The only thing that I take offense to is the way you presented in the beginning that the whole argument of what the hell is the GM supposed to do? What the hell is the really with the manager is what I'm talking about. There's always something a well-paid manager can do to make his team better, to put his position in a better position to win. So I think I took offense to that more than anything.
Was he doing it? I'm just curious. Was he doing everything that he could do the first 80 games of the year?
I mean, and I gave him a lot of praise for it. Like, even like with benching certain guys, putting Dansby Swanson down in the lineup, moving
PCA maybe the manager's
up
slumping
in the lineup. It's possible. Like,
maybe the manager is slumping.
Yeah, Dan. Danny,
maybe the manager.
I got a couple things here for you, really quick, Danny. All right. I have received a text message from the powers that be. They have slotted you in for Hit and Run this Sunday. They would like you to host Hit and Run for Matt Spiegel.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
When is it? When is that?
I love it.
I never knew.
Do you know who the host is? The host is Matt Spiegel.
You may know him.
He's talented.
Sundays.
He's a talented guy, but I just never knew when the show was. I'm sure it's great.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Manager number 11, Craig Counsell.
Craig Counsell, manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Just joining us, delivered the news, the passing Cub great Ryan Sandberg passed away at his home earlier today at the age of 65 after a battle with cancer. You know, we get a chance to interact with him, do broadcasts with him, and then obviously seeing him around the ballpark. The other thing was you got to see him around spring training and a fun sense of humor. He and Rick Sutcliffe love to play with each other. This spring, Rhino, you know, Sut doesn't always land the plane, right? And Rhino told a bunch of the coaches, and he had Craig Counsell belly laughing. He said, if you're cornered by Rick Sutcliffe and he's just talking too much, just yell Geronimo, and I'll come and I'll rescue you. And he just had that way about him. And the other component was just everybody wanted to be around him.
Craig Counsell with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
A couple times a month, we get the opportunity to talk with the Cubs manager, Craig Counsell, joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Craig, thanks for joining us very much. We appreciate it. It's been rough watching what's gone on with you guys and knowing how great the Brewers have been. What's it like from your perspective when you're trying to get things to go the right way?
Yeah, this is a baseball season, and you don't always get what you want. And so, you got to show up the next day and keep the right things as the priority and move forward.
Does it feel, betting it doesn't feel as bad for you as it does for the fans or for us sometimes? You're more seasoned in that way. Do you have any words of wisdom or optimism to help help us out, frankly, Craig, asking?
No, I mean, I think, telling people how to feel is not a good idea. I think you should feel how you want to feel. I think nothing bad has happened. We put ourselves in a good position. and the best part is yet to come. And that's how you have to treat every day, no matter what's going on in your life. So that's still the mindset we take. And we have an opportunity to have something cool happen today and something fun happen today. And that's why you show up for work the next day.
There it is. There's some real talk right there on the day to day. It's like we were talking about when a baseball team is hot and you're a fan, it's like nothing else in sports. Like there's a different person every day. It's like, oh, look at that. Here we go. And then it feels magical. And when it's down, when it feels bad, it's like there's nothing quite like that in sports. Don't you think? Like it can feel like misery to a fan watching in a moment like this. And I mean, I know you just said it. You've got to find a way to get yourself out of that if you feel any of that on a given day, right?
Yeah, I would not describe any of it as misery. it's really not. But I understand. And you know, it's a baseball season, and the great thing about baseball is when it's every day, you don't always get what you want. And that teaches you a lot. And it teaches you how to be resilient and teaches you how to show up the next day. You don't like those lessons sometimes, but, you know, we got to go through them.
Craig, how much did you wrestle with letting Ben start last night versus Javier? I know that the plan was to use them in tandem, and you did, but did you think, like, maybe we should let Ben go and then have Javier? What went into deciding Javier was going to be the lead guy?
You know, I think it just put Javi in the best position to be successful yesterday. And, you know, just in how we were going to pitch these kind of two games, we were going to need a long outing from Ben in one of these outings. And or a long inning from both Ben and Javi in one of these two games. And so that's the order we chose. You know, they did a good job against Javi yesterday. They got a big hit against Javi, a big home run. And that, you know, that essentially because we didn't score enough, that cost us.
So when you were watching Assad yesterday, how do you feel he did overall?
Man, I think it was okay. I think, the sinker was up more than probably it needed to be. This is a good offense. This is the, you know, one of the best offenses in baseball. It's a very tough lineup. They do not swing and miss. I mean, Ben had a very strange line too, with no strikeouts, for him. So, you know, it's a tough team to face. It's a tough offense to face. So I think Javi's the sinker was just a little off, and that caused some problems with the number of hits, obviously, of hard hit balls. And most of them were kind of on the ground and hard ground balls, but it was up.
Yeah, they're a weird one to figure out, those Blue Jays. We spent some time on it yesterday. They're like, it's not like any of the offseason acquisitions did amazing things for them necessarily, or last year's trade acquisitions. It's that a lot of their guys got better offensively. What are they doing as an offense that seems to be working? As you mentioned, not a lot of strikeouts for Ben. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's they're best in baseball, not striking out. They've got the highest batting average in the league. They got the highest on base percentage in the league as an offense. So that means you're going to have to, you know, really execute everything. And they just, you know, you have to execute pitches. You have to execute defensively. And they got a big hit last night. Without that, maybe it's like a 2-0 game kind of going into that inning, or a 3-0 game. But, you know, they got the big home run.
We're with Craig Counsell on the Spiegel and Holmes show here on 670 The Score. Have you thought about or talked with Jed about or wrestled at all with the idea of like bringing up a kid, I mean, I know Moises has been here, but maybe bringing Moises back or bringing up Owen Casey? Have those conversations happened at all to try to give the offense a jolt?
I mean, look, I think we have good offensive players in this lineup. And, you know, we can, there's going to be times in the season when they struggle a little bit. But I know collectively, and in here and in the organization, and everybody and the fans, we should believe in this group as offensive players. We should absolutely believe in this group. This is a good group of hitters. It's a good offense. And I understand there's some guys struggling right now, but this is a good offense.
A couple weeks ago, I was at Wrigley, and I asked you about like managing different players and personalities and what goes into that for a manager. When it comes to routine, Craig, how do you feel about guys sticking with routine versus getting to a point where maybe you change something in hope of trying to get a different result?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I think we're all just trying to like improve. We're all trying to just improve our processes as we go. And, you know, our routines are our routines for a reason. And I think we all, I think as coaches and as, you know, teammates watch each other's routines, and there's always adjustments going on with those routines. So, but they're routines for a reason. They're routines because they put you in a place to have success. You know, open to adjusting them always. Everybody is. But they're routines for a reason.
So when we hear tell that Kyle Tucker hit outside yesterday for the first time, it's like, not that he's superstitious, but were you involved in that conversation or that decision to try and shake up the routine a little bit?
No, that was a conversation with Dustin and himself. But it's, you know, that... I know we're grasping at straws a little bit here. I mean, but that's the smallest of tweaks in something. And it's visible, so I understand it gets talked about. But that's just adjusting your process a little bit maybe have create a different feel. That's what you're trying to do.
We are grasping at straws with Kyle because he's so good, and he's always been so good. And the quality of the at-bats.
Yeah, his at-bats have still been...
The quality of the bats and his pitch selection is still good. So it's like, it's what's going on. Have you seen the bat speed stuff that StatCast put on TV the other night? Do you give that any merit? Like, you got any theories on Kyle right now?
I think Kyle's a great hitter, like you guys say, that's going through a tough time right now. And I'm absolutely convicted that Kyle's going to get it going here. But, you know, I think that's what you do. You try to help. Everybody's trying to help Kyle. And sometimes that can be your worst enemy is like a lot of ideas in your head, too. But that's sports, man. That's performance, right? That's competition. And, but you know, we're convicted and Kyle's got a good process. He's a great hitter. He's got with a good process and you trust those things.
What role do you hope to play with your guys to let them know that everything is cool and that if they do have issues, they can come to you? Like I always wonder like how the day-to-day stuff, and it does feel bad for fans. I won't go as far as Speaks to say that you guys don't feel as bad. I saw a lot of frustration from players over the last couple of days. So how do you manage that part of it where things were going so well for this team overall, and it's not like things are going terribly. It's just leveled out and you're seeing this meteoric run that the Brewers are on that maybe shades the way that we look at it. Does it shade the way that they look at it?
Well, I think that's what's important to remember. I mean, like in the month of August, we're 4-6. So it's like, is that, you know, that feels like a baseball season, right? Like that feels like that's what happens during a baseball season. And I think, again, I think perspective is the way to, you know, even everything out. And I think you need to put different lenses on things like this when you're, when you're really close to it. And that's how you got to look at it. It doesn't, you know, we go in today with an opportunity, and that's how you look at it. And that's what's great about baseball. There's an opportunity every single day to put a win on the board. And you don't look at it farther than that. That's like looking at it kind of past that, I think, you know, those things that get you in trouble.
I agree with you. I feel like it's difficult though sometimes where like the concept of the 9-run homer, you know, like are you confident that guys
explain the 9-run homer to me?
The idea of like you're trying to hit a 9-run homer and you can't. So it's you know,
I've never seen anybody do that. Yeah.
No, me neither. It's a odd thing to do.
Not even in 2 at bats.
Well, I mean, I guess like in Rock and Jock, you could probably like remember the old Rock and Jock softball game.
Smack the head.
I actually think
on
they,
the top.
I think they may have had like a 10-run homer in that, but in you know real baseball, they don't. Mm. So how do you keep guys like locked in on the smallest picture instead of trying to regain ground that you can't?
Did we talk about the 9-run homer today? Should we give them as the goal a 9-run homer? Or?
If they're going to put that ball in the game, because I think that's what happens, right? In the Rock and Jock game, it's like, hey,
ball.
Right, it's the special ball, and it's like, here's the 10-run homer. I think it's a 10-run. I'm legit, like now, because we're all contemporaries, we're all around the same age. Uh-huh. I think that that's actually a thing that happened. I think there was legitimately a 10-run homer.
The Rock
ball.
And Jock, and I was thinking Super Jock, where you smack them on the head and then they swung.
No,
remember that?
No.
You're talking about the MTV softball game.
Yes, right? and I yeah. think there is like a 10-run homer ball that would come in occasionally.
Longtime Rock and Jock guy, Craig Council. I had no idea.
Yeah, big fan.
You ever get asked to play in that thing?
No. I remember it. I do remember it. Absolutely.
Was it,
was it
Dan Cortez? Is that the guy?
He was a god. He was a god of that thing. I'm glad
he
did this.
You guys want to feel really old?
Sure, Lawrence.
Kurt Loder turned 80 this year.
No, that ain't right.
Yeah, he did. Hmm. That's right. While we were watching Kurt Loder in our dorm rooms, he is now 80 years old. And we're all over 50.
Tabitha Soren is married to the guy who wrote The Blind Side and Moneyball.
Yeah, Michael Lewis.
Michael Lewis.
Yeah, and she's an excellent baseball photographer now.
Brings us all back around to the game. See how we did that, Craig?
All right, so
that's a good Michael Lewis. That's a good in trivia right there. I didn't an MTV. Like one of the hosts is married to Michael Lewis.
That is true.
Yeah, she has a whole book, Craig. If you want to look it up, like she followed Oakland during kind of the Moneyball stuff, and she has pictures. Like it's a whole photo, like a photography book. It's great. I actually interviewed her for it, and then she told me great stories about Tupac. So I was like, win-win.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally a win-win. But anyway, back to your team. How do you keep them focused on on? Just doing the next thing.
They're distractions. That's how you keep them focused.
I mean, was that your idea for the Canadian tuxedo road trip, or was that Justin Turner? I thought. Did you like it?
Yeah, that happened in like May. We decided on that. Yeah, it was mostly Justin, just a group of us trying to figure out something. We do it every year. Yeah.
All right. I mean, do you have anything in the bag of tricks? Do you ever think as a manager? All right, here we go. Here's my petting zoo. You know, I mean, a lot of other people have done that stuff. Do you ever think about something like that just to bust the tension a little bit?
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's organic. This is the best way. And you know, those things just happen. Those things happen with just groups of people that are together and teams that are together. And it's not about kind of when you're doing good or bad, it's about just joining the team together for fun stuff and stuff that makes you connected. So you're always thinking about that, whether you're doing good or bad.
We had a conversation a couple months ago, I guess, about Pete Crow Armstrong, and you made me cop to the fact, Craig, and I had to, that I didn't like when he threw the bat and he threw the helmet. And I got all baseball policey on this show.
You sure did.
I know.
It was upsetting to me.
And it was upsetting to a lot of people. And then last night I saw him throw the bat and the helmet again. Because there were a lot of times where I saw him like holding back. And last night he did it. And I was like, good. Go for it, Pete. Like, whatever it takes. Like, maybe he needs that. Maybe he needs to let loose with the emotion more. This is how much I'm scrambling. Does Pete need to go back to throwing the bat and the helmets around? Craig.
I don't think he's necessarily stopped. I wouldn't say that. But I think, you know, the point of that all is, you know, the original point and I is that, you know, we should, some of our flaws are our flaws, man. And like, we've got to accept them about each other. We work on them, and Pete's going to work on his flaws for sure. Like I should work on mine, but you know, some of it is we've got to also be a little, you know, forgiving of them, and understand that we're working on them, right? And that's the whole point with Pete. So, you know, I think Pete's trying to get better at everything. Like hopefully the rest of the guys are.
Did you have to have any conversation with him after pinch hitting for him with Justin the other night, which, you know, I mean, it must have not have been an easy decision. I think you've had times where you could have, and then you haven't, and this time you did. Do you talk about it with him after?
Yeah, I mean, I think those situations, there's not going to be many situations that cross the bar of doing that. And that was a pretty unique kind of situation in the game. You know, a pitcher on the mound that's got some pretty unique traits. It was a trait where I felt like it made Justin our best option. And I think Pete gets that, and he doesn't, and it's okay that he doesn't like it. That's cool. You know, that's part of this.
When it comes to your roster and guys that are scuffling, is there any value in looking at the way things are? And I know that you want to win the division. I'm not saying that you should necessarily concede it, Craig. I don't want you to think that that's where I'm coming from. But I do wonder if guys who are maybe dinged up or guys that maybe need more than just one night off, is that ever a consideration for you in whether to kind of redline it to try and figure this thing out and win the division, or say, you know, there's a whole nother season after 162 is over and we're probably going to be there. Why don't we do whatever we need to do to be ready for that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'd tell you the way to think about it is you're thinking about like, what's the best way for the player to be the best version of himself, you know, and then what's the best way for our team to be the best version of themselves. And the you're talking about results. I think I'm trying to help the players be as good as they can be. And then we've got to kind of live with the results. You know, that's how it works. But, so I think you're always, it's a short term and kind of a laser focus and a little bigger focus. And you always, as the manager, probably have those two things in your head. And I think a lot of your decisions kind of revolve around, you know, the bigger picture of the whole season or this game, or the next 2 weeks. You're always kind of putting all those lenses on every decision.
Craig, how does not having John Birdie and having the three catchers affect how you manage a game during the course of it?
Yeah, I mean, look, we ultimately made a decision that just the depth at catcher and injuries to current catchers, we didn't want to get in a bind in that situation. You know, I think John, you know, he wasn't playing a lot and he had a pretty limited role. But we do have to do some things a little bit differently, and it hasn't affected us much to this point. I think we'll have to evaluate if, you know, we have some injuries or situations come up where we feel like we're, put in a box essentially because we have three catchers, then maybe that changes the decision. But for now, and kind of how we've been using the roster, we think protecting the depth at catcher was the most important thing, and that we can kind of go forward with a couple of catchers on the bench.
Just three career games at the Sky Dome for Craig Counsell. Two hits, two RBIs. You ever see anybody up there in the hotel rooms, Craig, in all your times as a coach or a player? You ever see anybody doing anything of note in the hotel rooms from your perspective on the field? Sir,
like cheering for the Cubs, you mean?
That's one thing that you might see.
You might call it cheering. If
it's passionate. It's very passionate.
It's passionate cheering for the Cubs. Some fans were talking to us during early batting practice yesterday. Yeah, from the hotel rooms.
Were they?
Yeah.
All right, because there's legend of other things going on out there that people could see during the ball games. I don't know if that's just legend or not.
I feel like Craig might have just been telling us that in a way that wasn't as overt as.
Sorry. I'm trying to learn to speak Craig.
I am too. I'm just saying, like, you know, we don't always have to hang them out to dry, you know? Like, you just kind of let stuff happen.
Craig, all right. We'll hang out and watch Rock and Jock together next time.
There you go.
All right.
We appreciate you.
That'd be a great clip. I'd enjoy that.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Craig.
All right. You got it, guys. Take care.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.